I don't know. Duck and cover, bitches.
Hello.
Hi. Hey, guys.
That was a comment.
We're PDS podcast. What?
Obviously, that was the calmest like intro ever.
Yeah, we weren't out of control. Yeah. I think we're both kind of subdued. It's been a long day.
We're PDS, particularly dangerous situation.
Hey, y'all.
Hi.
If you haven't listened to us yet or before, or this is your first time, or maybe you listened to us once and it was like 12 half years ago, even though
eons ago,
you were wondering, what the heck is this? Well, we're here to tell you. We're a podcast.
Yeah, we're here to tell you. we're a podcast. Me and Bree, and she podcasts from the great Northwest, and I'm podcasting from Northern California. Mm-hmm. And we talk about weather and disasters and man-made weather, God-made, and other things that happen that are pretty damn scary. Yeah. And they fascinate us. We're a little morbid.
A little bit. I know this sounds so calm compared to what it's like later in the episode. I feel like
death and destruction.
Every time that little hardcore breakdown. So before usually have a good old chit chat that a lot of you'll know, but before we want to make sure, because we keep saying we're going to do this and we've done it like once or twice. And so we're doing it for sure in the beginning. We want to highlight a nonprofit. We're going to try to highlight at least every month a different nonprofit. So that means you'll probably hear it four times a month. Right now,
if you're listening that often,
if you are, and if we're actually releasing it,
assuming you're actually listening to us that often,
which hopefully you are,
which totally.
By the time you listen to this, we probably have hit our 1,000 listens. I'm sure.
Yes. Yeah.
And so with that, since the Australia fires is such a big subject and actually links to what I talk about today, I want to highlight giveit.org.au, and that's G-I-V-I-T, so there's no E in there. And it is a nonprofit for disaster relief. Their big focus is to donate essential items. So if you look on the site, the givit.org.au, you will see different, there'll be like lists at one point all the way on the bottom of what people need and where, but you can donate money directly to the nonprofit so they can get the essential items to the people in need. So yeah.
I love
Me
it.
Me too. I thought that was like perfect. That's, I mean, all the nonprofits.
Freaking fabulous.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah, it is pretty awesome. givit.org.au, correct?
And I think it's, I think this .org would be a different one, but once again, we're focusing on Australia, so.
Yeah. Yep. So there's a lot of really excellent sites within that site that you can give to. So pretty cool stuff. Yeah, I'm on it right now. Looks really awesome. Woo! Yeah. Give it, guys. Give it up.
Brett, how are you doing?
I'm good. It was an easy work day, kind of chill. I had a bev afterwards, which was nice. And I just got home taking my little monkey to the dog park, and she had a blast. I have some amazing video of her playing with another little puppy, and she's out of control. Oh my God, there was such a floof at work today too. At work today, so I work, I don't know if many of you know already, but I work at a bar here in San Jose, and it's an outdoor bar. It's actually one of the only outdoor bars in San Jose.
Are you trying to triangulate yourself so people can find you?
No, not at all. But so anyway, we allow dogs on the patio in the bar area, and I'm not joking when I tell you, I saw the biggest, cutest little floof today. Golden retriever who is 10 months old, and he was just big and squishy with a big black nose. And I was like, oh my God, I want to boop you all day. Oh my God. With the dogs, people. I love them. So anyway, my little Nina is all exercised out, and I brought her home, fed her, and now she's happily chewing on her little bone. Every once in a while, you hear this weird cracky, crunchy noise. That's not me cracking my knuckles. That is my dog chewing her bone.
And Britta tries to edit those out when she can.
Thanks, Britta.
I was about to say, sometimes you hear it because like you're talking while it's happening. So I was like, when you hear those noises, it's out of our control. And that's just life, because we are in amateur podcast.
We're real people. Yes. Guys, we're real people. How are you doing? I know that you just started school again.
Yeah, it's a couple weeks in. Yeah. My brain is already mush. I'm taking this like differential geometry class and I understand 10% of what's going on. I'm getting a better idea going back through linear algebra notes, which is good, which she suggested. So I like pulled them all out. I'm going to scan them and put them on my iPad too, but it is rough. Stats is fun. I like probability. That's a thing I enjoy, which makes sense when we talk about the things that I like to talk about on the podcast. But yeah, today was Friday. Today is Friday for me and Brett. It might be Friday for you if I edit this quick enough, listener. we'll see. That's why I say every weekend, not every Friday.
I mean, if we want to get technical, it's actually my Tuesday.
Oh, well, yeah.
Yay.
So on Friday means I only have one class because I go to class 5 days a week. And so it's 1 hour that I have to go to class and then come home. And I've been working on research for this podcast. I was like, what was I doing? Research for this. And then doing some math homework too. So yeah.
I'm not going to lie. I did my research while I was sitting at my bar.
Yeah, I thought you would.
I was like, it's so crazy trying to get all my shit together.
My favorite Brett's like, you want to try to record Thursday, which was yesterday. And I was like, I have two homeworks due within the next couple days. And I have like class per almost what feels like all day. Like there's no way. Cause I knew I was going to research either last night or today. So
I had a stir crazy animal because it was raining all day. Oh. So she was just like, so her and I were like playing probably the bulk of the day. I mean, it's like having a toddler.
Oh, yeah.
And when you have a puppy, it's like having a toddler. Believe it. And it's like when there's no noise being made, you're suspicious. You're like, oh, fuck, what's going on now? Where's the dog? Where's the dog?
For
real. You know, silence is never a good thing when you have a toddler or a dog, a puppy.
I would say any animals, even when they're not a puppy, it's worse when they're puppies.
Yes, way worse when they're puppies. I mean, just an animal in general. Yeah, they could be like somewhere in a room passed out or, you know, sleep. Like Maggie. Yeah, cool.
Yeah. But
Nina, not so much.
I'm down going first. So I used a whole bunch of resources because Australia is kind of mentioned at the end. So some of these are just for the stats and numbers, and some of these are for information. So I used Wikipedia. I used Vox.com. I used Time Magazine. I used III.org, which is Insurance Information Institute. I used FS.USDA.gov. I used KGW, which is a local newscasting news channel, news company, news place.
News Blues.
Yeah. And it was an article called 1 year later, an Eagle Creek fire timeline from Jared Cowley. There is a fact from the Statesman Journal. There is FAS.org and BBC.com. And last but not least, middle.io/fires.
Holy shit, Kate. Okay, go.
That'll all kind of make sense as time goes on. So as I go through it, especially because BBC had some like recent statistics for some stuff I want to talk about that was just posted on the 14th. So,
All right. Okay.
So I wrote this out like a report again. So let's see how well it went well last time. All right, so 2017 was one of the most intense years for wildfires in Oregon. One of those fires was the Eagle Creek Fire. This disaster devastated the land and the people around it deeply. Are you still here in 2017? Yeah. No?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
3 years ago. That's so hard.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't feel like that long ago, but yeah.
Wait, to when in 2017? What year? What
was in the fall, end of summer, beginning of fall.
No, I just moved.
Okay.
Because I moved down here in June of 20 or July, right after the wedding.
You moved right after wedding and right before I went to Europe.
Yep.
Okay. All right. So that's what I was trying to remember. I was like, so I think I mentioned here, I was like, Brett might not remember being here.
No, I do. I mean, I remember just because I left right as it happened. Yeah. And I was like, oh my God.
Well, you remember it happening, but you don't remember like experiencing some of the things.
Being here.
Yeah. And I didn't either because I was in Europe until the end. So, or towards the end of September. So Eagle Creek is part of the Columbia Gorge, as many locals just call it the Gorge. The Gorge is a natural scenic area, the Gorge is a national scenic area that is gorgeous forested area. Gorgeous forested area among mountains that is covered in trails. Quite a few of those trails will lead you to gorgeous waterfalls. Gorgeous is the word. One of those most popular waterfalls is Multnomah Falls. If you've ever visited Portland, there's a good chance your friends or family dragged you there regardless of the weather.
Hell yeah, it's beautiful.
So cool. If you remember me talking about the Missoula floods from episode 3, then you're not surprised that this waterfall came from those floods. Woo, woo, woo. So those floods helped carve the waterfall.
The beautiful falls.
The beautiful falls, along with many of the other waterfalls. Yet another survivor from geology history. There is a lodge next to the Cascading Falls and bridges that bring you closer to the sprinkling mist of the falls. This is why you proofread, y'all, just so you know, because this sounds like a middle schooler here. So both of these, the bridge and the lodge, was built in the 1920s. So the Columbia River cuts the canyon through the Cascade Mountains, which has split the two states, Oregon and Washington. This area is about 80 miles long and reaches as far down as 4,000 feet deep. When you hike through, you can see the evidence of some of the volcanic floods that happened to mold the area. Behind some waterfalls, you can see the formation of the rock, which is evident of the aspects of the lava flows. And that's like if it was really hot or really cold, or really hot or really viscous, I guess is the word.
Yeah.
Yeah, I learned that all in geology, so it's kind of fun to share that. So now that we know what the gorge is, obviously we're not doing the one with a gorge, but it's... I'm not a big hiker per se, but I do love getting on the top of a mountain in the gorge in like summiting, and it's so beautiful.
I am. I've been up there several times and it's freaking beautiful. I love it. I love hiking all around the gorge up there. It was one of my favorite things to do.
I'll probably send you, because I'm going to have you do social media, a picture that Dave took of me when we did Dog Mountain, and it's like me and the flowers and like,
yeah,
it's so beautiful.
Yeah. Melissa and I did a bunch. So yeah, for sure.
So great. So the gorge is a well-loved area that is cherished by many. Both Brett and myself have ventured these trails.
Yay.
Yay. Not together, unfortunately, but.
No.
Saturday, September 2nd, 2017 was a rather warm day in the Portland area with a high and low 90s and a low in the low 60 degrees. On the south side of the gorge of the Oregon side, spotted by some hikers, were some teenagers lighting and throwing fireworks into the canyon. During this time, especially with the rise of wildfires, there has been a fireworks ban. Some of these teenagers were recording these antics on the cell phones. At the time, I'm sure they thought it was innocent enough, but that's not the truth at all. So at 4 p.m., the Eagle...
Sorry, I just knocked my glasses off. I was wiping my nose and it just my nails caught on my glasses.
I know the truth. I shook Brett so much. That oh, my goodness. So... At 4 p.m., the Eagle Creek fire was reported. These fires grew to 3,000 miles by the next day. These fires grew to 3,000 acres by the next day, as well as trapped 153 hikers, some of those being children.
Well, wait, what's the difference between miles and acres? Oh, I guess a lot. 3,000 miles is like the United States. Yeah.
When I said that, I was like, I typed down miles and not acres. That was
this lit down. The entire U.S. on fire. Dude, that kid would be fucked.
Yeah. Oh my God. So these hikers had to stay overnight because of the fires. Mm. Some efforts were put forth to save and provide some rations, but it wasn't safe to do so. So they did end up sending some space blankets, but because they're higher up in like altitude, because they're hiking. Even though it's like 60s in the Portland area, it was much colder in that area. So they were wearing fucking hiking gear, you know, like 90 degree hiking gear and stuck there overnight. And so this is one of those, when you go hiking, always bring supplies. So you extra. Have stuff to like make a fire safely if needed, but like have extra food, make sure you have enough water. It's just really
be
important.
Be ready.
And if you could get a space blanket in there, that's great. We have one in our emergency kit, a space blanket just in case.
Yep. I have, I think, a 10 pack in mine.
Oh, nice. I need to put one in my hiking bag for all
they're really thin and small people. Like you could carry a half dozen and wouldn't even notice.
Oh yeah. They're so light.
Yep.
So let's see. It wasn't safe enough to do though. The temperatures were in the 60s in Portland. It had been chillier depending on they were on the trail, as well as they were isolated and dressed for summer days. They spent the night in the forest. I'm sure attempting to sleep on the bare ground. And I'm saying attempting to sleep, but they're on the bare ground because I would have slept. If I was those hikers, I would have been pissed and probably very hungry. So hungry. It was the next day on the 3 as we learned Oh, on the third. Three. Got it. It was
on the next, three.
Like I said, proofreading, man. It was the next day on the third, as we learned about the fire spreading like the news of the fire did, that we found out it was due to a kid fucking around with fireworks.
Asshole.
On the fourth, a Monday, the fire continued to spread west. This also brought smoke and ashes into Portland. Some people I talked to said it was very strange to see what looked like snowing and ash coming from the sky.
Yep.
This brought air quality down and warnings were sent out. People began to wear masks.
Yep.
Within 3 days, the fire grew more than three times to about 10,000 acres. KGW article by Jared Cowley breaks down how quickly it spread. Burning 13 miles in 16 hours, 30 miles of Interstate 84 east of Portland through the gorge is shut down. Lenoan Falls Lodge is threatened and the fire crosses the river into Washington. Level 3 evacuations are put into effect for 400 homes.
Yep.
So by the 6th, 4 days from the start, it has merged with the Indian Creek fire in Washington across the gorge. Mm-hmm. This fire had at least 31 acres in its grasp. Mount Hood Community College opens their doors to those evacuated. They sit among each other wondering if the fire will take their homes. The Columbia River was closed to marine traffic for 20 miles.
Yep,
so the whole area was just kind of like shut down. The whole sky's gray. It looks like a Silent Hill or dystopia novel, something crazy. Yeah.
It was nuts.
Oh, yeah. And I know for me, when there are the California fires that happened in 2018 and the smoke was coming up, that fucked me up. So I was glad I wasn't around for that.
Yeah.
This part, because I would have had to stay inside. I get really sick with that much smoke, I found out.
Yeah.
So this fire continued to spread and take over 50,000 acres over the next 3 months. So NASA released the picture from space where you can spot the smoke of the fire.
Oh, you're going to have to post that.
Oh, yeah. I'll have to find it. I think I saw it.
Yeah. I'll post it.
Yeah, yeah. I remember that when this happened, Caleb, the husband, and I were in Europe. We flew back at the end of September and the fire was still raging. We could see it from the sky. How heartbreaking to see the plume of smoke covering that much area. It was not too much longer after we came back home that we experienced some of the smoking conditions ourselves and ashes, even an almost a month later after the start of the fire. Because I remember one of the days after we came back, there was some ashes. And it was nothing like the earlier days, but it came to be smoky again.
No, but I remember seeing friends' pictures that they posted on like Facebook or Instagram, and it was like watching snow. I was like, Jesus Christ, this is bad.
It was like covering vehicles and stuff. It's so weird.
Like when St. Helens exploded.
Yeah. Which is totally on my list. I was like, I need to do that. Luckily, the almost 100-year-old lodge did not burn. However, not so much can be said for the area. Over 13 trails were shut down, and some roads remain closed here and there for repairs and clear out for safety. November 30th, 2017, it was declared that Eagle Creek Fire was 100% contained. It's noted, though, that in March of 2018, there was still some smoldering fire. And this was from Wikipedia from Statesman Journal. So months later in May, there were still, I think, like fire started to come back up from this fire.
Oh, my God.
Which is crazy to me that it could last like that long.
Well, embers. I mean, those things burn, you know, forever.
So FSUSDA.gov has an Eagle Creek Trails closure map and list available. It was last updated August 2019, and there were 28 full or partial trails that are closed due to the fire still today.
Ugh.
I checked, and that means like today on the 17th, I checked this. And I counted and
of 2020.
Of 2020.
Almost 3 years.
Those trails are closed, which is so fucking sad.
Ugh. Is this kid under like lock and key guard? Because people probably want to murder his ass.
You're going to hear about him soon.
Oh, good.
So, so 28 full or partial trails, depending, because it's like sometimes it's just a trailhead area that's closed, but still they're closed. There are only so many people available to clean up the trails as normal maintenance. And when you include fire damage, it's quite a bit of work for sure. I met one of the people that do, I was meeting arborists and stuff with a nonprofit I was working with. And she was one of the people who helps clean up trails, which is a normal thing that they do for maintenance.
Yeah.
I never thought of.
I actually used to help do that.
Oh, nice. But you know, it's not a huge team. And when you have the 50,000 acres that you're trying to clean up, like, and do it safely, this is it's mirrored. And like how
it's
much
a nightmare.
You know they're not getting a lot of money either towards that.
No. So. Most of them are volunteers.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So let's talk about what happened to the person who started this fucking fire. So since he's fired, we don't know his name, which is lucky for him, I'm sure. At first, I remember reading that he wasn't going to be charged or along the lines, like, if he's charged. And I remember reading the comments and everyone's like, you're fucking charging him.
I'm surprised he wasn't lynched, not charged.
Oh, my God. Well, but we know when, well, there's obviously someone who knows he is. But since he wasn't reported because he was a minor, he was 15 at the time when it happened. At first, I remember reading that he was going to be charged. So February 2018, he was sentenced to 5 years probation, 1,920 hours of community service with U.S. Forest Service, write apology letters to about 150 people that were trapped on the trail, as well as others, such as the city of Cascade Locks, who was evacuated, the Forest Service, Oregon State Park, Confederate Tribes of Warm Springs, and the list continues. A few months later, in May, the teen was ordered to pay $36 million in restitution. Some of that went to a woman who lost her home due to the fires, and also like went to Allstate, I think, who probably paid for possible some houses or areas being burnt as well. Yeah. This was set up in a 10-year payment plan, however. So if he completed his probation the 5 years and didn't commit in any crimes in 10 years, then he's all good. Which, so it's frustrating because I'm mixed with feelings.
Yeah,
I'm glad he got some punishment. Like, thank God. But it also feels somewhat light because he was a dumb teenager doing dumb teenagers things. I would like to hear what y'all think.
Agreed. I want to too.
Because I'm glad that he was charged and we didn't sweep it under the rug. And I'm glad that he got the Forest Service. And I mean, he has to pay some money back, but $36 million, like, I'm sure he probably realizes what his dumbness, like what he did affect how many people's in like people in area.
Oh my God, I'm sure. But it's just like, I mean, I'm sure like there's also some part of his defense that was like, not defense, like his defense team or whatever.
Yeah.
Because you know, again, this was a court issue that they were like, oh, he's just a kid. He's just a kid and kids play with fireworks. But I'm sorry, at 15, you're a goddamn adult and you know better.
I mean, like your frontal lobe isn't completely done. However, I think maybe because I grew up in California.
I heard their frontal lobes aren't completely done until they're 26, but you're still a goddamn
adult.
Between
like, yeah, it's like between 20 you know? And 25.
But you know the difference between right and wrong.
Yeah, you should. And also growing up in California, it's like ingrained in your head. Like you don't throw cigarettes out the window. You don't do anything with fire because it's a fire hazard. And I figured Oregon is just dry because it was super hot in 2017. So that's part of things being dried, and we have like cheatgrass all through Oregon, which is a quick burning grass as well. So it's just, to me, it's like, yeah, you don't fucking light fireworks where there's fucking fuel. That's all fuel. That's
all. You don't light fireworks in a forest.
No, like
you're in a national forest. Like what?
Me and Brett are so frustrated by this. Before I finish my half, or as I wrote, before I fished my half, I wanted to talk wildfires for a bit more.
Yeah.
So over the last 10 years, the average amount of land that wildfires take in the United States is about 7.8 million acres a year. In 2017, the year of the Eagle Creek fire, there was a total of 10 million acres that was burned due to wildfires across the country. And that was due to 71,500 fires. I want to bring this to attention yet again to talk about Australia real quick.
Yep.
So if you look up the figures, there are different numbers that you get on just how much Australia is on fire. And part of that is because they use
hectares.
Hectares. I was like, I knew I could say this instead of acres. So it makes it, because it's like more metric. So a lot of the range is between 12 and 18, but that's hectares and not acres from what I was reading. According to Wikipedia, which references an article from Fray Noble, which is from the article on 9news.com.au, it's estimated a total of 46 million acres have burned.
Fuck.
This is about 24,000 square miles, according to middle.io.
What the shit?
That is huge. I mean,
I'm not joking. If I ever see this kid in person, I'll punch him square in the face.
Well, that was for the Australia fires, the 46, 24.
Oh,
the kid, that fire.
Still.
The Eagle Creek fire was, it came down to 50,000 acres, which is a huge chunk of land. But then looking at that and looking at Australia right now, 46 million acres have caught fire. That's about 24,000 miles are on fire. So again, if you'd like to donate, please check the description for the link for some disaster relief nonprofits to donate to, including the one that we mentioned. Yeah. The link is linktree.com/PDS podcast, and that's linktr.ee/PDS podcast or slash whatever. There has already been fraud and scammers taking advantage of disaster, which is no surprise because garbage people are always garbage.
Always.
So be diligent in choosing where you donate. You can also find an official list of places to donate from middle.io/fires.
Yeah. So I'm just curious, how did the Australia fire start? Was it weather?
So when you read, there's different articles that say part of it is man and part of it is like lightning and stuff. It's actual natural because it's not just one fire. It's like multiple fires that some of them are merging, kind of how like the Eagle Creek merged with the Indian Creek fires. Some of them were arson. And some of them were like doing brush fires and they're not supposed to do fires. Mm. And then some of them were just like lightning and shit or just natural causes.
Lightning and shit. Mm-hmm. I love it.
So you're going to see an article that says 183 like people arrested for arson since it started the fire. Yeah. In the year of 2019, there have been 183 people suspected and I believe like 24 people arrested in all of 2019, not just for these fires. And that's not for every fire. That's just for some of the fires.
Okay.
Because you have to be careful because some people are using it as a counter to climate change, saying that the fires in Australia has nothing to do with climate change, but has to do with people starting fires.
No, that's bullshit.
Absolutely not truth. I learned even more about how the fires can create its own like micro ecosystem that makes more fires. And like pretty much like that cloud turns into a pyroclumbia. You know how to say, I think.
Pyroclastic.
Thank you. Cloud. Yeah. Wait, is that right? Or
Well, for like in a volcano? No.
Pyrocumulus. But it turns into like a big rainstorm cloud. Like it can turn into, essentially the fires could create the clouds that actually create thunderstorms.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. That could create, I mean, it's all weather related. Yeah. It's all going to, it's like circular. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so
it's like these particular clouds can actually create clouds that create rain. And then like that would create like acid rain or like, you know, that would,
But like even, like that. So like the fires are creating the clouds that can create thunderstorms and lightning storms, which can create more fires. And so it's
Exactly. So it's kind of like a slippery slope.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's some
crazy stuff.
But that's the Eagle Creek fires that happened about two and a half years ago, really.
Also, I stand behind what I say. If I ever meet this kid in person, I'm punching him in the face.
I think a lot of people will. You might need to wait like one more year to do that.
Yeah, don't care. I'll assault a teenager.
Brett gives no fucks.
I give no fucks. Don't fuck with our national forest.
If I was him, I would fucking move as soon as I could.
But look, here's what I'd say. I would hide. I would hide. I would change my name.
I would homeschool.
Because that is... You can't recover from that. You just can't. No matter how much you apologize and be like, that was a dumb... People make dumb mistakes. That was devastating.
Exactly.
And not just for other people, but for like the animals, for the climate, for it was devastating. So when you're that fucked up, like I understand why some people be like, that's it, I'm gonna end my life and I'm just a kid living. I get it. Don't do that, kid, but boy, change your name and go hide in the Caribbean or something. Because
for real. All right, girl, your turn.
Hey, I'm Char.
And I'm Kelly. And together we host Drinking and Screaming.
We're a new horror discussion podcast based out of Vancouver, British Columbia, where each episode we pair a new cocktail with our movie of the week.
For instance, I'm pairing this ad with just a shot of tequila. You know, because most ads are horrible.
With Drinking and Screaming, you'll find yourself pulled into a new horror film to discuss and a new cocktail to try every week.
Every episode is laced with great soundtracks, theme breakdowns, production trivia, Char's bad drinks, and so much more.
What?
I said clips from the movie.
New episodes every week. Join in on the spoops, Drinking and Screaming, wherever podcasts are found.
I give this ad a 5 out of 10.
You know, we don't rate the movies.
5 out of 10.
Hey, y'all. Having a disaster podcast, Brett and I find it really important to talk about some disaster relief that is much needed for Australia. If you visit the description or PDS podcast on Twitter or Instagram, our bio links will lead you to some ways to help. Thank you for taking a moment to listen, and we're thinking about all of our friends in Australia now.
You ready?
I am.
You went for something new, so I'm going to go for something old.
What'd you do?
This today, guys. I did the Great Flood of 1862.
Yay! Oh. Have we not done this?
No, we have not.
You double checked, right? We did a Great Flood of 18 something.
Oh, I'm almost 100% certain that we did not do this flood because it's still on my list.
The Great Flood of 1862. It's episode 3. It's the same episode as the Missoula Flood.
Jesus, you're criminy Christmas.
Never mind. It was episode 3. It was episode 8 that you did it.
We're going to go with the 18. I'm still going old. 1816, a year without summer.
Yes.
Okay. Bring it on. This is going to be impromptu. So I'm going to use my Wiki Love, the Wiki Wonderful, my favorite thing ever. I know like everybody knows about farmers' almanacs, correct? Because like, yes. you know, we all know those and people heavily rely on them and they're like, oh my God, this is really important, blah, blah, blah. So it's important to recognize things like that because of something like this. So 1816 is known as the year without summer, also the poverty year, and 1800 and froze to death. That sounds very, that sounds a lot like something we'd say these days. 1800 and froze to death. Because of the severe climate abnormalities that caused average global temperatures to decrease by almost one full degree. So that's pretty heavy duty considering that usually temperatures should only vary by, on average, I guess it's like 0.01 or 0.11 or what I remember reading it somewhere, but so it said that the average global temperatures decreased by 0.4 to 0.7 centigrade or 0.72 to 1.26 Fahrenheit. It did result in major floods and shortages across the Northern Hemisphere. It says that it was predominantly what they call a volcanic winter event caused by an 1815 eruption of Mount Tambora in April in the Dutch East Indies, which is now Indonesia.
Okay.
So again, what we were talking about just now about how to change the environment, when you talk about thunderstorms creating lightning or volcanic eruptions or the clouds from fires creating thunderstorms and then thus creating more lightning, et cetera, so I think it's something very similar.
Yeah.
This eruption was the largest eruption in at least 1300 years after extreme weather events from like the 500s. And perhaps exacerbated by the 1814 eruption of Mayan in the Philippines. So it's like you kind of had sort of back-to-back volcanic eruptions.
Yeah, wow.
The year without summer was an agricultural disaster. Historian John D. Post called this the last great subsistence crisis in the Western world. Climatic aberrations of 1816 had greatest effect on most New England, Atlantic Canada, and parts of Western Europe. So imagine like farming, wildlife, etc., just being heavily, heavily affected. All right. In the spring and summer of 1816, a persistent dry fog was observed in parts of the eastern United States. The fog reddened and dimmed the sunlight such that sunspots were visible to the naked eye. That's fucked up.
Fuck.
That you could see that. Just be like, oh, look at that. Neither wind nor rainfall dispersed the fog. It's been characterized as a stratospheric sulfate aerosol veil. Gross. Oh. You talk about now being able to breathe in like fire area that will.
I would have to really stay inside. I'd stay in a bubble. God.
I wonder how hard it was to breathe back then. All right. So I'm basically reading this verbatim from Wikipedia, but this is probably one of the better sources on it, at least right now. I think there's like two others at like weather.org. So, the weather was not in itself a hardship. For those people who are accustomed to long winters. So again, if you think about like the Northeast, the New England area and like the settlers, they were used to these really crazy long winters without the kind of things that they needed to sort of subsist or they made do, right? So they were used to this kind of stuff. The real problem lay in the weather's effect on the crops and thus the supply of food and firewood. At higher elevations where farming was an issue anyway, even in the good years, The colder climate didn't support agriculture. So in May 1816, frost killed off most of the crops in higher elevations in Massachusetts, New Hampshire, and Vermont, as well as upstate New York. So all of the Northeast was affected. On June 6th, snow fell in Albany, New York. June 6th, snow. So I want to just take it back a second. On June 6th.
I basically went to January because it was like, yay, January. June 6th, it was snow.
June 6th, snow fell in Albany, New York, and Denny'sville, Maine. In Cape May, New Jersey, where I loved to vacation when I lived in Philly.
Yeah. Okay.
Loved it there. Frost was reported 5 nights in a row in late June, causing extensive crop damage. Okay. So it is not that cold in June. It just doesn't get that cold. I mean, you're lucky if you're like, you can sleep with the windows open, like without having to use air conditioning during that time. It is hot. Okay. Many commented on the phenomenon. Sarah Snell Bryant of Cummington, Massachusetts wrote in her diary, "Weather backward." So like it basically just reversed.
Yeah.
At the church family of Shakers near New Lebanon, New York, Nicholas Bennett wrote in May 1816, "All was froze and the hills were barren like winter. Temperatures went below freezing almost every day in May."
Wow.
May in the Northeast. Yeah. The ground froze on June 9th. On June 12th, the Shakers had to replant the crops destroyed by the cold. On July 7th, it was so cold, everything had stopped growing. I was like, oh God, these people, So they had severe frosts every month, May, June, July. Like they were like, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
A Massachusetts historian summed up the disaster. Severe frosts occurred every month. June 7th and 8th, snow fell. And it was so cold that the crops were cut down, even freezing the roots. In early autumn, when corn was in the milk, it was so thoroughly frozen that it had never ripened and was scarcely worth harvesting. Breadstuffs were scarce and prices high, and poorer class of people were often in straits or want of food. It must be remembered that the granaries of the Great West had not been opened to us by railroad communication, and people were obliged to rely upon their own resources or upon others in their immediate locality.
Wow.
So they were kind of up the creek without a paddle.
Yeah, for reals.
Yeah. In July and August, lake and river ice was observed as far south as northwestern Pennsylvania. And this is like in summer. July and August are typically the hottest months in Pennsylvania and Virginia. So this actually kind of occurred across the planet. It's not just in the United States. Europe was affected. Indonesia was affected. Asia was affected. So it wasn't just like, oh, it's going to be cold here in the U.S. It's like literally everywhere across the globe. It was like this. So that's why they call it a year without summer. It was like the entire global phenomenon.
That's so crazy.
Yep. So from USA Today, they did a article on it in 2016. Snow in June, freezing temperatures in July, killer frost in August. The most gloomy and extraordinary weather ever seen, according to a Vermont farmer. 2 centuries ago, 1816 became the year without summer for millions of people in North America, Europe, leading to failed crops and near famine conditions. So in addition to the food shortage, the natural climate change also caused disease outbreaks, which is also very common in association with like lack of sun, lack of normal weather.
I about to say it fucks up your immunity probably. And then like vitamin C, if you're not having, you're probably getting scurvy.
Vitamin D.
Yep. Okay.
Widespread migration of people looking for better home and religious revivals as people tried to make sense of it all. Of course, people are like, God, why are you doing this to me? Why have you forsaken me?
Revelations, man.
Right? The gloom spread to the literary world. The foul, frigid year inspired the plot of Mary Shelley's epic horror Frankenstein. I was not aware of that.
Huh.
So I was like, oh, look at that.
I didn't know that either.
And they did mention that it also can happen again. Big volcanoes can erupt at any time and with little warning, potentially changing the climate and giving temporary reprieve to man-made global warming. So what we're doing now to our planet, yes, it sucks and whatnot, but like, I mean, we could have an event at any time and boom, there you go. It's like, all right, now that's going to change how everything works.
Yeah.
We could have another summer or summer, a year without summer. It could be possible. We can't reliably predict exactly when a volcano is going to erupt. So, or how powerful it's going to be. So until it's actually upon us again, it is possible to have another year without summer. So it's not out of the question. The actual eruption of Tambora, it was on the island of Sumbawa in what's now Indonesia, and it was 100 times more powerful than the 1980 Mount St. Helens. So we did discuss that also.
Yeah.
Talking about Mount St. Helens and how it left ash on people's cars. And
wow.
100 times that. You know, and people talked about, I remember people who lived in Portland talking to me about it and how it was like cloudy, or like they didn't have, you know, sun for quite a few days because of the actual eruption.
That's wow.
Yeah. It was ranked as a 7 on its 8. So the U.S. Geological Survey, they have a range.
Mm-hmm.
It's called the Volcanic Explosivity Index, and the highest is a 8, and the Mount Tambora was a 7.
Wow. I wonder what Pompeii was.
We'd have to look that up. I'd have to see if I'd be intrigued to see what that is.
Cause I didn't see that when I did all that research. I'm curious.
The Volcanic Explosivity Index.
Yeah. Which the I'll definitely look it up when I do St. Helens.
Yeah. It did spew out enough ash and pumice to cover a square area of 100 miles on each side.
Whew.
And a depth of 12 feet. So this probably, ooh, I would think this rivals Pompeii.
Yeah.
I don't know if it did. I would imagine that it didn't, because I feel like we would know, you know what I mean? Like where people froze and that.
Yeah.
I didn't have that kind.
Like, that was kind of, I guess, like coincidental of how quick and how fast.
True. And maybe people had a chance to prepare, or, you know.
Yeah. But 12 feet still probably close to Pompeii, because Pompeii, you know, you had to dig out. People couldn't see the city.
But what's crazy is that this says, I mean, according to this article, it says that this was the deadliest volcanic eruption in human history.
How many people passed?
71,000 people.
Yeah. I think only like 200 people passed or something though in Pompeii, they say.
I think it was just because it was so epic and so fast. You're right.
Yeah.
I think it was just kind of like, bleh,
yeah,
you know. 1,200 were killed directly by the eruption. Heavy snow falls in northern New England June 7th and 8th with 18 to 20 inch high drifts. June 7th and 8th. June. 18 inches of snow. That's a problem, people. In Philadelphia, ice was so bad, every green herb was killed and vegetables of every description were very much injured. Frozen birds dropped dead in the streets in Montreal, and lambs died from exposure in Vermont. On July 4th, one observer wrote that several men were pitching quoits. I guess a game in the middle of the day with heavy overcoats on. So I guess it's like, you know, they were playing a game, but they were wearing like crazy heavy weather clothing.
That's funny.
Frost in Maine that month in the month of July killed beans, cucumber, squash. Let's see. Ice covered lakes and rivers as far south as Pennsylvania. By the time August rolled around, the more severe frost further damaged or killed crops in New England. Europe also suffered mightily. The cold and wet summer led to famine, food riots, and transformation of stable communities into wandering beggars, and one of the worst typhus epidemics in history.
Oh, that's fucking crazy.
Yeah. Absolutely nuts. Let's see. Blah, 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 blah. So overall, they did say that on average, the land temperatures cooled worldwide by 3 degrees.
Wow.
So super, super intense globally. Changes. Oh, here it is. Okay. Pompeii was Mount Vesuvius, right?
Yes.
Here we go. The eruption of Mount Tambora in 1815. I'm going to take a screenshot of this so I can post this on social media. Okay. The eruption of Mount Tambora in 1815 was the biggest recorded human history. Cubic miles of ejecta. And I'm assuming ejecta is like the projection. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's what I'm guessing too.
So AD 79, Mount Vesuvius, 3/4. Krakatoa, 1883, 4 1/4. So it's like, imagine like a little ball. Here's 3/4 of it. Here's
and
4/4, right? Or 4 1/4. Mount St. Helens, 1/4. You ready? Mount Tambora, 1815, 19
quarters?
So they call 19
holes. No,
they
holes.
Call it cubic holes. Miles. Cubic so miles 19 of ejecta.
Cubic miles.
compared to Mount Vesuvius, which was 3/4.
I got really stuck in that quarters for a second there.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Well, Mount St. Helens is 1/4.
Wow.
1/4 of a cubic mile. Mount Tambora was 19 cubic miles of ejecta, which means like material.
That's intense.
Right? So I'm going to take a screenshot of this so you guys can just get an idea of just what it's going to take to cause basically the whole world to go into a nuclear winter.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of essentially what it is.
Yeah.
You know? Only it's natural, not nuclear.
Yeah.
So it says that eruptions in the scale of Tambora occur once every 1,000 years on average. So guess what, folks? We're going to be overdue soon. No, we're not. Let's see. Hold on. 1,000
years. Like 200 years.
Sorry. Wait, no. Okay. You're right. 1850. So it's going to be 2850. We have 800 more years.
Yeah.
Okay. Y'all millennials are fucked.
Millennials of the next millennials.
The millennials after three grandfathered and millennials are fucked. I don't know what they're going to call them. Probably like the Xeno generation or some shit.
They're sure. It's going to be like the, like when you have like Excel generation sheet, when it keeps going across to each other, it's like generation X, Y, and Z. And then it's
going to start back over in A.
Well, I was going to say it's going to be like generation C, D, or like CQ, like in Excel. When you go more and more to the right, it starts doubling letters up.
Yeah. What's so weird is that like when it talks about how it could soon happen again, right? So every 1,000 years on average, so around 2,800, whatever, we should be expecting another one of these. Although I feel like it's going to be sooner because of what we're doing to the planet.
Yeah.
It also did say that Krakatoa's 1883 eruption, which again, Krakatoa was 4.25 cubic miles, caused global cooling nearly 5 years later, even though it did eject less material than Tambora did. So it's like, we could still have something that's smaller.
Yeah.
Just as amount as a great effect. So 1816, the year without summer, because of that eruption, piggybacking another eruption, we literally just basically wiped out our summer. We caused so much shit in the air. Well, not we, but the planet had spouted so much stuff that it basically was like, oh, summer? Yeah, no, we're going to skip that this year. We're just going to keep doing winter.
Just kidding.
Just kidding. It's just winter. It's just, we like it. We're just going to keep it this year. So, So scientists didn't figure out the link between the global cooling until the 60s and 70s, where they started doing more research on it.
Nice.
And how it interacts with global warming. So
yeah,
they do say that it shouldn't be underestimated that, you know, it could definitely, the global warming effect can really increase volcanic activity. So we have to be absolutely cognizant of it, and continue to keep working towards, better ways to,
do stuff about it,
recycle, do something about it, and just keep trying to beat down climate change.
If there's any youngins out there that don't know that climate change was previously referred to as global warming, I don't know. Because like global warming was what we all said. But
it is true. Yeah. So we have kind of changed it.
Yeah. Because people argued of what it meant. Because there's a lot of confusion because it's very scientific.
And it's like, but it's colder. I'm like, yeah, I get it. But
that's because of the global temperature.
Don't be a Trump. Don't be a Trump, you idiot.
That's why they changed it to climate change, because it makes it a little bit more understandable. Mm.
So the good thing about this one is that I had already done a little bit of previous research on it because I thought it was so fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
I did know that it was volcanic in nature. But again, I wanted to, we had to pick some quick because I had already done the flood and I was like, man, I feel like I'd done this before, but there was like new facts I was finding. I was like, oh my God, what about this? But anyway, the year without summer was also, again, very fascinating, and it was a volcanic event, but we have to keep in mind that these volcanic events are going to be heightened and sped up if we don't watch ourselves with climate change.
Yeah.
So, we got to be cognizant of that. So yeah.
Damn.
Year without summer, man.
That's crazy to try to imagine what that was like. Like I can't even.
I can. Freaking snow in June. That's weird as shit.
That is the weirdest fucking shit ever.
18 inches of snow.
Unless you're in the southern hemisphere, that shouldn't be happening. Or if you're on one of the poles.
I mean, but even then, and so like on the West Coast, you can't think that that was not affected. It was. Temperatures were cooler.
Yeah.
But remember, this was worldwide. So it was also in Europe. It was in Asia. I mean, like everyone was suffering.
Say that because like southern, like right now is like how in Australia and down there, it's all summertime and up here true. It's winter.
Yeah.
So that, but like how far it affected everyone.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Crazy far reach. Yeah. Very far reaching.
I mean, it's already crazy to think like when there's a fire and we see smoke up here when the fires are in California. Like that's a crazy thought. Now think of it as like the eruption of a volcano. It's not that you're seeing the smoke. It's literally changing weather.
It's changing the weather.
God.
Right?
And like miles and miles and miles away.
Yep.
Wow. Yeah. That's a good one.
Everyone. Yeah. I know. It was short but sweet. So.
No, I like that one. That was really good.
And for real.
No, that's good because Caleb's hungry and so am I. So short and sweet.
Yay!
It's good when we switch to short and sweet sometimes.
Love it. Yay! Love it.
So that was our episode. I think
it was
pretty grand. Thank you for listening, everyone. We'd love to hear. I know we asked some questions about what you thought about our disasters today. We would love for you to come tweet us at PDS Podcast. You can also see us on that Instagram and slide into our DMs at PDS Podcast. Brett is currently taking control of social media. So if hit up on Instagram or Facebook, there's a good chance it'll be her. Not that you'll pop on there. I'm usually on the Twitter, though. I don't tweet a lot, but I do sometimes. I'm trying to get on there more because no one's tweeting back at me, y'all. So at me,
guys,
literally get
tweet back
at me hi. You can also email us. We love to hear about your own experience. Maybe you have a disaster you want us to cover. Maybe you have.
Oh, share. Please share.
Yes, please do. So you can do that at pdangerous@gmail.com, which also me and Brett hop on there and check the email. Woo-hoo. So yeah, please come hang out with us.
Come hang, guys.
We appreciate it. By the time this comes out, I'm really thinking we're going to have 1,000 listens. If you want us to do a 1,000 listen giveaway, we have to hear from you.
Yes. So
if you let us know that you want us to do a giveaway, let us know what you're thinking for the giveaway and let us know you want it. And maybe we will get together and talk about it.
I've already got one.
Oh, yeah.
It's like where we post this really cool graphic tee and you tag your friend so you both can have one. Ooh. What?
Well, we did have the one where what was it? I did a giveaway to subscribe for the sweater.
Yeah.
And someone won. That was great. They look really cute in the sweater. And now we know the sweater looks really cool. I still need to buy our own merch one day. But
yes,
maybe we get some more designs. So yeah.
Someday.
Me and Brett really love that you guys listen. Me and Brett have so much fun doing this.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much.
We love you so much.
Yes. And as amazing Brett thought up, we want you to all... We're going to say it at the same time one day. One, two, three. Duck and cover. Oh, duck and cover.
I'm like, wait, what? I'm like, all writing stuff down. I'm like,
I know.
What are we doing?
Those notes. We want you to duck and cover.
Duck and cover.
When appropriate. That just is kind of our little tagline right now. Unless duck that changes. You know, you might not, but I kind of like it.
Yeah, I do too.
That's why it's the beginning of the music, which we'll have Brett re-record one day.
Oh, yeah.
All right,
nerd laughs. Bye guys, thanks for listening.